Welcome, welcome to this Shamanic Astrology Mystery School members call for the month of July. We are here on June 28th, looking at what's about to transpire over this next month, and it's pretty amazing. So, Daniel, I forgot to ask you if we had any announcements before we got started.
I just have two. One is that for those who may not already know, that I will be teaching a sacred marriage relationship intensive in Bali January 3rd to 8th. It's a follow-up to the one I did last month. It'll be the old style, you know, 5 or 6 days all together, including going to sacred sites. And then the other thing, was there something else? There was back and forth. There's different like communications that came out about, we had a few for Ireland and so on. Actually, that's all been handled. We fortunately, again, have a completely full group. So there is no more space in that event. However, we are looking ahead till next year, the third of September through the 15th of September, and that'll be back in Scotland. So the first week in at Callanish, and then a week in the Kilmartin Argyll Valley. So we're already planning ahead for that. That's what I've got for today.
Okay, and then for me, the Shamanic Astrology Council, we are doing a co-creation with the elements and modalities weekend workshop at the University of Earth, October 26th to 28th, and the details are on the website. In case you're interested, it's going to be amazing. We'd love to have you be there.
I thought of one other announcement, just that Eric and I will be starting up another Mars series next month, because that's one of the main features of today's call, which is the really remarkable big time stuff happening with Mars. And so that's the beginning of a new Mars cycle. We'll be doing another over 2 year long series on that.
Yes, beautiful. So are we ready to start then?
Sure. All right. Let's go through the position of the planets, both astronomically and astrologically. Technically, we'll start with Mercury. Technically, Mercury is actually an evening star all month, but from mid-July onward, it'll be too close to the horizon to see very well. And then we have Mercury going retrograde later in July, depending on where you are, on the 25th or 26th of July. And it's right around the time when Mercury hits retrograde in the evening sky that we lose sight of it. But up in this first few weeks of July, it'll be one of the better times for you all in the Northern Hemisphere to be able to actually see Mercury. Then with Venus, is a very bright evening star still. It's going to very soon start sinking down toward the horizon, even though it still has its greatest elongation a little bit in front of us, as it prepares to go through its underworld phase and to metamorphize into the next version of the goddess coming up in November 1st or so. But it's still pretty dominant there in the evening sky. I'm going to jump to Jupiter and Saturn. So Jupiter is in the evening, and it's quite distinct. You can't not see where Jupiter is. And then Saturn, because of the placement of Saturn in its yearly cycle, is like also dominating the whole sky. You know, it's hard to tell whether it's whether you technically would say it's a morning star or evening star, because it's really up there the entire night. If we go back to Mercury, when you see Mercury, it's a 0.0 magnitude. Venus, I believe, was 4.3 magnitude. It can get brighter than it is now. And then Jupiter is about 2.2, Saturn is 0.0, and then back to Mars. Oh my gosh, what a month for Mars. Some of you have been hearing this from other classes, from other monthly calls, but what's happening this month is Mars is raising in magnitude from minus 0.2 to minus 2.8, and will be brighter than Jupiter. The brightest that Jupiter can ever be is minus 2.8, but it will not be that bright at this time. So Mars will be unbelievably strong and bright. It won't be quite as red as other times. It'll be more, sort of yellowish, and that's because of the fact that Mars is undergoing a maximum major dust storm. Like the entire face of Mars is a big dust storm, and that's changing the color a bit. The closest Mars comes to the Earth is on July 30th to 31st, but the opposition point is coming up this month also, and we'll see Mars on that day, July 26th, rising in the east as the sun sets. So it's like Mars will be seen, earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier in the evening sky. So Mars is truly center stage, and we'll get into some more of the remarkable details about the what's going on with Mars over this next month later in our call. Now, if we look at the way the planets are moving through the zodiac, the entire month of July, Mercury is in Leo. It starts out at zero Leo. By the end of the month, it's at 22 Leo. And the reason why it's staying in the same zone is because of the retrograde that's coming up later in July. The stationary direct point of Mercury is in August 18th, at 11 Leo. So basically that is establishing the overtone. The next version of Mercury that will be on the world stage will be Leo, but that metamorphic phase when it's becoming Leo is going to be happening as we reach the end of the month. Venus begins at 18 Leo and then will reach 23 Virgo by the time we get to August 1st. Mars, which is in its retrograde motion now, the entire month of July goes from 9 Aquarius to 2 Aquarius. Way more about its relationship with the South Node as we go through. Jupiter, which is currently at 1332 Scorpio, will reach its stationary direct point at 1321 Scorpio on the 10th of July, and then by the 1st of August will be at 14 Scorpio, and it's going to then make its final thruster movement through the scales, a part of the sky that's very near and dear to Kaylin. then we, you could talk about that more later, but I always think of that when I think of the scales. Anyway, and then Saturn goes from 5 Capricorn 42, also now retrograding back to 3:33 Capricorn. Uranus moving forward, it's not one of the few that's not retrograde, it goes from 1 Taurus 56 to 2 Taurus 32. Neptune, currently retrograde, from 1627 Pisces to 1601 Pisces. Pluto, 20, is also retrograde. Pluto at 2020 Capricorn, and it will retrograde back to 1933 Capricorn by August 1st. The nodes are now in this really interesting portion of their cycles, because we're now just about to enter into an eclipse season. And one of the more interesting features of the way the nodes move, and moving retrograde, but during an eclipse season, they can end up staying at the same degree like for two and a half months. So actually, as this month ends and the beginning of July occurs, the nodes will have reached their magic 5-degree point. I say magic 5-degree point because that's the one that's for 2.5 months. So like it's 559 Leo at the beginning of July, and by the August 1st, it's 552 Leo. And that would be the north node, and of course the south node would be the opposite of that, 5 Aquarius, 59, and 5 Aquarius, 52. And this has a major, major relevance to the Mars cycle as well as the eclipse season, as we shall see. Also, by August 1st, yet another one of the bodies we follow, Chiron, will be retrograde. And actually, I forgot to bring that up when we were discussing before our call, Kaylin, the date that Chiron goes retrograde. I don't have that listed.
I have it.
Yeah.
I will tell you momentarily. July 4th. And it's at 225 Aries, and it will go direct on December 9th at 2754 Pisces.
Right. So it will be retrograding back into Pisces after its first foray into Aries. We have, for those that are interested more about this particular transit and ingress and cycle of Chiron, we have a whole class on that, of Chiron moving into Aries, one of our teleclasses from some weeks ago. Vesta begins at 26 Sag, and it retrogrades back to 22 Sag. And just for the fun of it, because we don't hardly ever talk about this, but it's partly because it's moving so slowly, Eris, 2403 Aries. It's around that degree the entire year. So anyway, but it can have high significance on your own individual charts. And then, as I mentioned, we also will be in an eclipse season. And last point here in our opening, in this sort of opening larger context, is that from an astronomical perspective, July also includes Earth at aphelion, meaning Earth at its furthest point from the sun. And it's 1.02 astronomical units. One astronomical unit is the average distance between the Earth and the sun. And so when it's furthest away, it's 1.02. And when it's closest in early January, it's 0.98. So that's the variance in the Earth orbit. It's not entirely circular, but it's certainly more circular than Pluto or Mercury or Mars. All right, that's our opening context.
So just to say that I think that aphelion this year is happening on July 6th. I looked it up, and so sometimes it's on the 4th of July, sometimes it's on the 6th of July. It varies a little bit from year to year. So this year it looks like it's on the 6th. And the other thing that's happening, the other thing that happens on July 6th is the sun conjunction with the star Sirius. And this was, this time of the sun conjunction, like Sirius hasn't been visible in the sky for a while now. And it's really like from June 25th to August 7th. It depends on your latitude, how soon Sirius rises or is visible in the morning sky, but it's usually at least that much time. So this whole month we won't see Sirius because it's with the sun. Interestingly, the founding fathers of the United States, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence and signed it, they timed it to coincide with the sun conjunction to Sirius. And of course, the Egyptians had a really strong connection to this star and the heliacal rise of this star as well, because it meant that the Nile would start flooding when Sirius rose as the morning sky.
That's a whole amazing backstory about how the African and Egyptian transmission was so connected with Sirius. And the larger cycles of history that they tracked was based on what was called the Sothic calendar, which had to do with the long cycles of Sirius. Their secular yearly calendar was, like many in that part of the world, was the closest new moon to the spring equinox. But the larger cycles had to do with Sirius, and in particular because there was long periods in history where the rising of Sirius would correspond to the inundation of the Nile. But that does change over long periods of time. And one of the persons that I always bring up in the invocation is Lady Sesshet, Thoth's consort. And you know, she was the one actually who devised the techniques for rebuilding the entrance points of the temples as Sirius would change its place where it would rise on the horizon based on its longer, bigger cycle. That's just an aside there. There is that Freemasonry connection of our founding fathers all the way back to the Egyptian mysteries.
Yep. Pretty cool stuff. So, you know, you can't see Sirius, but know when you see the sun, Sirius is right there, and the sun is, in a sense, illuminating and activating the star energy coming in from there. So, kind of cool.
Well, I wanted to mention, even though it's happening June 30th, and we're having this discussion here before fully entering into July, is that June 30th, Moon conjunct Mars. I'm mentioning this because it's a very significant point in the current phase of the Mars cycle, but it's also a precursor to next month. And so that if you see Mars near the Moon, then that's 1 month to go, that at the next full moon, there will be Mars, right next to it. I mean, nearly being occulted by the full moon. And so we're 1 month away, and that would be the next Moon-Mars conjunction in this phase zero of the Mars cycle. And that this is the phase where Mars is, the way I like to look at it now, it's like this is either when Mars is going through the bardos between incarnations, or where the conception has already happened that has to do with the new archetype of Mars that is birthing on the world stage, fully birthing, coming and individuating, we could say, at the point of opposition. And that's happening this month also, July 26th, July 27th, in that time frame, right around the full moon. And that's the full birthing of the Aquarian archetype for Mars for both men and women, and the main subject of the understanding of the Mars synodic cycle. For those of you that are in the synodic cycle class, well, we're working on Mars right now, right? So, I mean, this is definitely Mars season for so many different reasons. So I think tonight, if you go out and look at the moon, you'll see Mars really close to the moon. At 5 Capricorn, 5 Capricorn 30.
Beautiful. So where do we want to go next with?
Well, unless you had something else on your list, the next thing I saw was that there is the last quarter moon on July 6th at 14 Aries 13. Kaylin, I forgot to ask you before the before we got on the call today. Are we now regularly sending out the moon statements?
It's posted with the audio for the members' call. When the audio is posted, it's that there's a PDF of that information with it.
Okay, great. So I want to direct you to that, because there's some more in detail information there about how to work specifically with the moon phases during this month, including the fact that there's a partial solar eclipse and a total lunar eclipse within the lunation cycle that is happening in July. So you may want to reference that as you tune in to this month. Great, thank you. July 9th, Venus moves into Virgo.
And July guess 10th. What? It's hanging out with the star Regulus, and it's going to be very close. They're going to be pretty close together. So definitely worth seeing if you can check it out in the evening sky, seeing Venus with Regulus.
There's so much important symbolism associated with that combination, associated with the awakening of the sacred feminine, the focus on the sign of Virgo, and as well as the imagery of the autonomous sovereign self now existing strongly within the sacred feminine. All those mysteries can be connected in with what you see there when this kind of alignment happens. Then
beautiful.
July 10th, is Jupiter stationary direct, and that's at 1321 Scorpio, and I made reference to that earlier. So, Kellen, you might want to speak to the Jupiter going through the scales.
So very close to Zubanel Janubi, that's around 15 Scorpio, and it's been really cool to watch in the evening sky. They're pretty close together. The brighter one, of course, is Jupiter. And so if you're looking out in the evening sky, you can't really miss it unless it's cloudy. And Zubanel Janubi is, because it's around 15 Scorpio, it is at the cross-quarter point, meaning that when the sun reaches the halfway point between the autumnal equinox and the winter solstice, or the September equinox and the December solstice, if you're in the southern hemisphere, it's the opposite season. But that halfway point, that cross-quarter point, when the sun reaches 15 degrees, that it happens to reach it with this star, Zubanel Janubi, the two main stars of the scales, Zubanel Janubi and Zubanel Shamali. And they seem to represent a stargate, or like a portal that they go through. And it looks like Jupiter is going between them. So it's like going, sometimes it goes below Zubanel Janubi, but it looks like it's going between them right now. So I'll post a little article I wrote about Zubanel Janubi for people if you haven't had a chance to read it yet. It gives more information, more insight.
Yeah, and this is sort of like the finality of that weighing of what Jupiter and Scorpio represents, weighing on the scales, you know, like the Egyptian imagery of the weighing on the scales of the relative weight of a feather and the human heart. And I look at this as a testing ground for the Mystery School of Scorpio. We have a whole teleclass on that, you know, exploring what is the shadow of that mystery school, as well as how we're revisioning it as we move into the next era of history. So that's all wrapped up in this Jupiter transit. The effect of this Jupiter transit through Scorpio, I've learned so many new things in chart analysis from this about how the Jupiter transit will activate an original complex. You know, so it's just yet another example of why you cannot go by the older version. Well, Jupiter good, Saturn bad. You know, or you know, Jupiter just is all wonderful. No, but if it's expanding something that's really difficult, then it's a confrontation with the shadow, the restrictions, the limitations, the secrets, the downside. Also, if you happen to have a difficult complex there, or been following this in light of certain well-known cultural figures about who have the configuration and what Jupiter has done for that. Talked about that in the past. So I think it's a real significant point for the Jupiter transit. And by the end of July, Jupiter will still not have fully gone through the scales. It'll only go up to 14. So we've got another month or so of Jupiter poised to go through the scales again.
Yeah, then, you know, there's a thought about the weighing of the heart and the feather, and so the idea is that the heart is heavier, then the person who's died will return to reincarnate here, and if it's lighter, then they get to go on if they choose to go on to somewhere else. That's the kind of what the story is about. But in a way, we could say what's happening on the world stage is it looks like we're weighing the heart of humanity with the feather, with the, you know, it seems like a lot of people are stepping up to come more from a heartful place while other people are just not. So kind of interesting. Yeah.
And the intensity of that time frame then goes up a couple days later, where we have the series of remarkable events happening around the new moon. I mean, it kind of starts off with the Sun-Pluto opposition at 2001 Cancer, 2001 Capricorn. That opposition between the Sun and Pluto does happen every year. It is, you know, part of the yearly cycle. It happens to be July 12th, which is then the new moon, with a solar eclipse, a partial solar eclipse happening on the July 12th new moon. And that also then begins the eclipse season. This particular eclipse season has two partial solar eclipses and one incredibly exact and long lunar eclipse. More about that when we get to the July full moon. I consider the eclipse season to be highly important, particularly if you happen to be in a nodal return or nodal reversal cycle, or if you have something really close to the degrees of where that magic 5 degree that I mentioned. We could also include the 4th degree, because that's the degree of the Mars opposition and the upcoming full moon. So then that new moon with the eclipse, and there's some clues on the written material that goes with this call about how to work with the partial solar eclipse and this particular new moon. And then that's followed by the moon going across Mercury, conjuncting Mercury 2 days later. And then a Moon-Venus conjunction, number 5, after Venus has risen from the underworld, but 7 Virgo or so. So you might want to discuss this one,
Kayla. This is where the Aries goddess, who's been on the world stage since March 31st of 2017 and continues to be on the world stage until October 31st of 2018, and then a new cycle begins the next day on November 1st. So this is where she's in her ascent process. We see her in the evening sky. She's making this next conjunction with the moon, retrieving, reclaiming, restoring whatever it is that she's doing with that throat chakra, her voice, her ability to speak for herself and also for others. As the Aries goddess who is here to restore the cosmic balance, to bring back the common good and justice to all, hopefully. Anyway, we can hope for that. That's the intent. That's what she's all about. And how does she speak about it? How does she show up and really stand for something rather than fight against? But what is she standing for? Yeah. So we could see, so that she's, you know, that her voice is heard. And we can see, really, that expression of the goddess has been, more women are stepping up to run for office. We've had amazing expressions on the world stage with Wonder Woman, the movie, and Black Panther, and other ways of the Me Too movement, all of these different things that have been happening. And now all the voices that are speaking out for the children who are being disenfranchised and harmed by what is happening here in the U.S. So,
For those who follow the political end of it, the last couple of days have seen really progressive women scoring pretty significant upset victories over establishment candidates. You know, so that I've been watching that with great interest.
Yes, so beautiful.
All right, so that anyway, so there's so much to the meaning of that time frame, the new moon, and then the conjunctions with Mercury, followed by the conjunction with Venus. But then it's also, you know, spectacularly beautiful to actually see in the sky. And depending on where you are in the world, the moon would be either close or far from at Venus. I forgot to check to see where it would actually show up the closest. I'm not sure. Do you know that, Kaylin?
I think it's probably, you know, like the 14th, 15th, and 16th on the 15th. It's 9:35 Pacific time, TM Pacific time. Moon is exactly conjunct Venus. So I'm guessing that night is the closest.
What I mean is that because that's so close to the exact conjunction, you all in the West Coast area were probably going to have a pretty close. It'll look pretty close.
Yeah, I would imagine it would. Yeah, absolutely.
Then moving forward on July 20th, we have a moon conjunct Jupiter, but that's also the day of the second of three exact Mars South Node conjunctions, June 7th, July 20th, and September 25th. I consider this to be potentially the most important factor in the beginning of this new Mars synodic cycle. Eric did some really good research on this. He I think was originally planning to be on the call for this month, and he had, I'm sure he would have had plenty of things to say about this. He discovered how rare it is for there to be three conjunctions, like a triple conjunction, of the South Node with Mars. In fact, there won't be another one until 2155. What is the potential meaning of this? In the shamanic astrology paradigm, one of the ways I like to generally describe the nodes in transit is that the north node could be thought of as the collective flow of global humanity is moving somewhere, and then the south node would be where it's come from. And so it's kind of like an origin point that you can actually use. For a 19-year cycle, but since we're now looking at the larger, broader themes by bringing in the Mars synodic cycle, I'm going to suggest this takes us all the way back. I mean, what do I mean all the way back? Here we have Mars and the South Node in Aquarius. Most of the people that are in the school, or we grew up at a certain point where we heard all those stories about what happened during Atlantis. Now, whether Atlantis actually existed or not, at least it exists for sure in our mythic consciousness, in our archetypal consciousness. So to me, Mars in Aquarius with the South Node would have to do with what happened at that time. Misuse of technology combined with idealism, you know. So it's like, okay, we can do all this really cool stuff with crystals and so on. We can actually do genetic experimentation, and we can combine different animals and humans, and wow, this is so cool, we can do this. But then, you know, as all the stories go, you know, that it also ended up destroying the civilization, the misuse of technology. And I don't know how many writers have brought up the fact that many of the technocrats in the world today, as well as the visionary leaders, are reincarnated Atlanteans. You know, here they are again, you know, working with the same kind of clash of themes between the idealism of Aquarius and the belief that technology will save us, or the mind will save us, and so on. Anyway, I think that these themes even amplify more strongly this whole dynamic of Mars in Aquarius, and also the fact that Uranus has just moved into Taurus. More about that at the end of our call. So we're actually revisiting the Aquarian past of the human species, you know, and hopefully being able to have the idealism and the connection to actually heart, because, you know, Aquarius, even though, you know, the sign of Aquarius is an air sign, yet it exists in the portion of the sky that's water. Water is the soul. Aquarius, the sign, is the spirit. You don't even need a body for spirit. However, to have to be ensouled, you know, anima mundi, the soul of the earth, is, I believe, what needs to be remembered here as, you know, great advances in technology happen. But again, we think back to what happened in Atlantis, so whether it physically happened or whether it only happens in archetypal memories. So keep that in mind. And what I find incredible is that September 25th, the third of the exact South Node Mars conjunctions, is at 4:10 Aquarius, which happens to be within minutes of the exact point that the Mars cycle births at the time of the total lunar eclipse on July 26th, 27th. So I think this is then highlighted also by the fact that when we look up at the sky on July 20th, we have the Moon conjunct Jupiter in Scorpio, and that's, you know, also like part of a fixed sign or in a self-interest, self-exploration dynamic with Taurus and Aquarius. I'll take a breath.
Yeah. And also because Jupiter will still be with Juvenile Janubi near that cross quarter point, the powerful, you know, the Moon being there, Jupiter, and then the whole Mars South Node piece. Definitely, you can see Mars. You won't see the South Node, but you can just know if you're looking at Mars, that's where it is. So tuning in and getting, you know, going out for the direct download. What's this mean? What's it all about?
Well, the themes definitely intensify that trying to bring to light here is that because by July 25th, then we have the Sun square Uranus quadrature. So we have the Sun at 3 Leo squaring Uranus at 3 Taurus, and this then brings in that ingress of Uranus into Taurus, and now we have Leo and Aquarius involved with it. And then on that very same day is when Mercury goes stationary retrograde at 23 Leo. So this dynamic between Taurus, Leo, and Scorpio, I think, and Aquarius, of course, is, I think, really important as we go through this, the growing intensity toward this total lunar eclipse. Unfortunately you all won't see in the U.S., but it is actually the longest total lunar eclipse of the 21st century. And one of the reasons why it is the longest is because there's a correspondence between this full moon and the fact that this full moon is its near furthest point from the Earth. So it's the moon farthest away, which then basically creates the phenomena that if there's an exact lineup between the nodes and the moon, because the moon is so physically far away, you then have the Earth, you know, creating that shadow for the longest possible amount of time. So this and the exact point of that full moon is 4:45 Aquarius. And the chain of events happening on that day is just mind-blowing, because we actually have the exact Sun-Mars opposition at 4:08 Aquarius, which happens for those of us on the West Coast, happening in the 10:14 p.m. on the 26th. And then at 11:48 a.m., Moon conjunct Mars, and at 1:20 p.m., just a couple of hours later, is the exact exact full moon and the eclipse. See, the fact that that's happening at 1:20 p.m. is why it's during the day in America. So fortunately, those of us over here in the Pacific, in South Asia, we'll get to see this. One of the really lucky things for us over here is that both total lunar eclipses that happened in 2018 are visible from where I am here in the Philippines. But that doesn't always happen like that, to have visibility on two of them in a year of lunar eclipses. I mean, this is a lunar eclipse year as opposed to solar eclipses. And again, longest of the 21st century.
So just some from the Sky and Telescope, Earth Sky, they're saying that this, the totality of this eclipse will last an hour and 43 minutes. So there's a good hour before and a good hour after where it's becoming total, but a whole hour and 43 minutes where it is at totality, pretty amazing. That is a really long time. And so, of course, then that means, too, because the moon is furthest away at that particular time. So at the new moon, the moon is closest at a new moon. So it's a perigee moon or closest to the Earth. So that amplifies the solar eclipse. Partial solar eclipse energy of that, you know, whenever the moon is at a new moon or a full moon, and also close, and also an eclipse accelerating that energy, it's powerful. And oftentimes things like earthquakes and, you know, big weather patterns, things happen around that because the magnetic pull on the Earth, the moon's magnetic pull on the Earth, activates those kinds of things. So, it's pretty remarkable, these two eclipses being both at perigee and apogee and creating these phenomena.
All focused in on the fourth and fifth degree. There is also then another very not very visible, not directly experienceable, hardly anywhere, another very minor solar eclipse, partial solar eclipse in August. So the full moon on July 26-27 is right smack in the middle of the eclipse season. For those who like to work with the Sabian symbols, I do suggest if that's what you love to do. That used to be a major part of my own practice, whether it's the Rajarian one or the Linda Hill one, or whether it's the one by Lonsdale. Look up the fifth degree, and that should be really interesting to get additional insights about what's actually going on here.
I was just going to say, of course, anybody who has angles, nodes, planets around those degrees of either eclipse, or even when Mercury is stationing retrograde, because it happens to be stationing right on my midheaven. I'm interested to see what that'll bring. Just to pay attention to those degrees, so that you know you can see if you're being personally activated or not.
And then I'm going to just throw another something in here that's August 1st, right at the end of July, which is the second of three Mars square Uranus, May 16th, August 1st, September 18th. And so I think this is significant and important for some of the reasons that we've already been discussing here about the relationship between Taurus and Aquarius, And now we can see how strongly the Leo part of this fits in, as well as the Scorpio part that fits in. Mars square Uranus at 2 Aquarius, 32 is where Mars will be, and then Uranus at 2, 32 Taurus on August 1st. So that's that dynamic relationship yet again being to be able to see between Taurus and Aquarius. And in my own tuning in here about the times we're in, if I had to say, what is the primary inquiry for global humanity, whether you have anything personal here at all? Clearly, if you're age 47 and you're in a Mars return, or if you have this dynamic between the Taurian Mystery School and the Aquarian Mystery School on your natal chart, well, then the primary inquiry is, how do we integrate these two opposite realms? One that's of the earth, that is of embodiment, more shamanic, more connected with being fully embodied as a human being. And then the Aquarian ideals, which can go up and out, and hugely idealistic, but potentially splitting off from being physically embodied. And then the unrealistic trusting in technology, particularly if we don't question who is owning or running the technology. Is it in fact truly democratic? Is it actually something that actually does serve everyone? These are the questions that I think are greatly on the table as we go through, and then remembering the themes associated with the Atlantean experiments. Anyway, you can see how much fits into this, whether it's the global internet brain or 5G or downloading consciousness into a chip, to GMOs and genetic tampering and all the rest of it. And to me, the Uranus moving into Taurus is basically waking up Taurus. So wait a minute, what are you all doing? Is this hubris? Is this taking it too far? Is this where is the justice? Those were Zeus's comment to Prometheus after he stole the fire. He said, "Oh, this is right. Okay, you got fire now. You take it away. You're good for you, Prometheus. You stole fire from the gods. But beware of two things: hubris, the belief that you really think you are a god, and number two, forgetting about justice." So, these are, I think, the themes that are in the air based on these remarkable cycles in July coming up.
And I might, Daniel,
go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say that all of this is also within the context of Mars being out of bounds from July 7th to September 24th. And that wild card factor whenever Mars goes out of bounds.
Yes, I know. We almost forgot that. If there wasn't enough stuff on the table about Mars in July, in this cycle, and this would happen any time that this important portion of the Mars cycle happens anywhere near a solstice, then you have this phenomena of it being out of bounds, beyond the boundaries of 23.23 degrees declination. So, wow, that also. What is Mars about? What's going to happen with Mars?
I know. Mm. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then the full moon right there with it. And I forgot to mention is that this upcoming full moon, the full moon every year in the sign of Aquarius, could be thought of, and many different parts of the world will view it this way. I certainly learned about this when I went to Mount Shasta in the 80s. It is the Vision Quest full moon. It's the one specific to that particular activity, to cry for a vision, or to go to be like an eagle, see the bigger view, disconnect at least for a short period of time, severance from your normal routines, and to request guidance from spirit at that particular point. I highly suggest that any of you that have the opportunity that take a few days or at least a few hours, depending on where you live, to be able to tune in big time to that Vision Quest full moon with Mars. There's a suggested way of working with the lunar eclipse, and this would more specifically apply to those who could actually see it, although you can certainly work with it exactly the same way whether you see it or not. And that what happens in a total lunar eclipse is that the first hour before totality starts as a full moon, and then you see basically all, you know, the moon going through all its phases until then it's a new moon, no moon. And then the hour after totality, the little crescent moon, big, bigger and bigger moon, and you have the entire phase, of all the phases of the moon going back to full again. And what I like to envision here is that in the hour before totality, that's the critical time to be able to look at the shadow, to look at, you know, what has not been recognized as the shadow of these different energies. So which energies are we talking about? Leo, Aquarius. And that's what is being emphasized by that time frame. And then you're in the shadow, and you're going into deep inquiry during the time of totality. And then as the crescent moon comes back, and then you see the moon swelling back up to full, is the time to set really clear intentions. And, you know, haven't honestly looked at what the shadow of Leo, shadow of Aquarius. And I do not mean it doesn't even have to be personal stuff you have, but it's like envisioning like the collective shadow of these energies. And there's enough evidence of the collective shadow of Leo happening. Just if you look at the external world, political world. But anyway, you can look with that. You can tell the truth about it, tune into the honesty around it, and not to be afraid of looking at where your own shadows are there. And then you go into this deep place of where the moon is completely occulted by the Earth's shadow. And then as it comes back, then you've got another opportunity to plant seeds for at least the next 6 months, until the next eclipse season. So that's one. I think that's one way of working with it. There could be many ways of working with an eclipse, but that's the way I like to envision it at this point. You might want to remember just to take a look at the handout where I'm offering themes to consider when setting intentions around the new moon. And then those same intentions could actually be reset as at the end of totality, you know, as it goes back to full again. So it's like having two times in a month to have a setting intention new moon experience.
And just one thing to add to that, Daniel, because I think this is really important too, that going from full moon to new moon back to full moon in an eclipse, it takes usually about 3 hours. This one's going to be a little longer. It's going to be more like four or longer than that altogether by the time, because it's 2 hours of totality, or almost 2 hours of totality. But still, it's compressing in our experience time. So, you know, it usually takes 29 and a half days to go from full moon to full moon. And what we are able to witness the whole entire moon cycle in that compressed amount of time of four-ish hours. Right. So we can imagine that it's accelerating whatever intentions we're holding in consciousness at that time. So it's important to be conscious of what it is you're intending and wanting to bring forth, and not just allowing it to be whatever, you know, like really a specific thing.
I remember all the different times in our school and many of the times we've been together to work on lunar eclipses.
Yes.
They're not to be taken lightly. It really works not just to set intentions, but to have a group of some kind. I mean, it's a wonderful time to have a collective, honest sharing about shadow, and then to set the seeds. to create the seeds for what we would envision for the next 6 months, for the next 19 years. You know, because you can stretch it out, you know, depending on the lunar cycles. Don't wander off alone if you're doing ceremony with it, right? Well, you all get to do it in the middle of the day. Here we'll have the actually full experience of this lunar eclipse in the early morning hours.
Yep.
All right.
Beautiful.
Can you think of anything else?
I feel like that we pretty much covered it. So maybe it's time to open it up for questions, insights, ahas, anything. If you have personal chart questions based on anything we've talked about, you can press *6. I think it'll ask you to maybe, it'll give you directions after that if you're not familiar with this conference bridge. So we can take your questions or insights. Mm-hmm. And I'm not seeing anybody jumping in. Oh, here we go. Yay. Okay. Hi, Emma.
Hi. Just, I have Venus at 4 degrees something minutes Aquarius. At
yes.
The time of this eclipse. And Daniel, everything that you and Kaylin have said today makes me realize that this is a very, very special energy time for me. I'm being overwhelmed with feelings and thoughts about remembering past and getting them confused with present. It's been a real crazy time the last couple of months for me anyway. It's sort of like I've been bouncing between different areas, different dimensions. But I'm really looking forward to this. And I will take the suggestions that you're giving us and try to get a little group of my friends together for that day.
That's fabulous.
Beautiful.
Excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'd be right on the front lines, and I can completely understand how. It's to me when I'm from what you shared, Emma, it sounds like like this merging together of past with present, including a recapitulation, really. You know, so I mean, you would be utterly well placed to be able to get direct transmission as to what the shadow and the light is of the Aquarian archetype.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, I am so blessed to have Saturn there with my Venus. In between the
yep.
North Node and Venus, that Saturn is there to keep my feet on the ground.
Right. And bring a reality function into it. I know, that's it. I agree. This Aquarius, and you have to remember that, you know, Saturn used to be, you know, before the outer planets began to be used so heavily, you know, that Saturn was the so-called ruled Aquarius as well as Capricorn.
Right, yeah. I'm very, very much in touch with that, having done my first astrology with the traditional method.
Right.
But thank you again so very much. I know that once I re-listen to the recording and print out the PDF that you've given us, that I'll have a lot more questions, and I might just be emailing you and asking some questions.
Absolutely. We do invite you to, anyone who listens to these monthly calls, to do that. So absolutely, Emma. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't know who this is, but your mic has been unmuted.
Hi, this is Faye. How are you? I'm in your class, your Venus class, Kaylin. Hi. I just cannot believe how much is happening. I'm fairly new to astrology, but it just feels like there's just so much happening. I have a couple of questions. You had mentioned something very early on in the talk about Sirius, the star Sirius, and you had said something about Lady something. I kind of wanted to read about
that.
Oh,
Seshet, S-E-S-H-A-T. She actually existed in Egypt even before Thoth, and it is said that it was she who taught Thoth astrology, sacred geometry, and then he taught it. But she was the original source of the measuring, you know, the calendric, the sacred geometry, the astrology, and so on.
Okay.
I love her. I mean, she's not really given enough credit. So later on, she was always pictured as the consort of Thoth, but she actually goes back further than Thoth. And that, you know, of course, after a period of time, Egypt became highly patriarchal, but it wasn't original.
Cool. That was very fascinating. I think I have that star conjunct my sun, and my next question. My sun is at 6 degrees Leo, and my rising sign is at 5 degrees Gemini. My moon's at 4. So when you talk about degrees, the fifth degree, would it be any degree planet that's at that close to that, that you would have more of an impact with this?
It would be, well, six is close to five. No, this would be associated with the cross. You know, so basically it would be the... what, you know, in a more mainstream approach is called the fixed signs. We call them the mystery schools of self-interest or self-exploration. So it would have to do with, you know, Taurus, Leo, Aquarius, Scorpio.
So then, yes, in my case, I'm a 6-degree Leo. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It's a big deal. Okay. So,
it's a big deal.
Yeah, I feel it. I totally feel it. And I'm so grateful to be... have a place like this to go, and what you said about, you know, just I really do feel that it is these things cannot be taken too lightly when these eclipses happen, because you really need to be sort of grounded and aware of what your intentions are. So you mentioned a handout, and where would I find that?
So Faye, when you go to the members, samsmembers.com.
Right.
And you go to where the audios are posted. This audio will probably be posted tomorrow, but I've already posted the July moon PDF there. That it'll go underneath the audio. Eric probably put it that underneath. And I'll also post some articles I've written on Zubin El-Janoubi and Sirius so you can have you can read those as well to get deeper information if that's something that works for you. And
I'm just beginning to I'm thinking about doing a meetup in my area. I live in the Northeast, and I've been outside not a lot, but lately just looking, because there's so much going on out there. And I want to do it with a group. I don't have a lot of people that, aside from you guys, which you're all online, but I really want to try to find some other people that live near me to go outside. So to just make this, and like you said, the eclipse will be happening during the daytime for me, but still, I just feel like it's a good thing to do.
And then that night, you'll have a full moon that night. So, you know, so therefore you'll be able to see Mars right next to the full moon, and even closer to your own configuration.
Right. I took an amazing picture.
And if you can figure out, and maybe I'll look this up and post it too, when the full moon rise is. Of course, it's going to be different for different people, but... I'll look it up for a couple of different places and post that so people, because if you can, you know, we have mountains where we are, so it comes up often a little bit later.
Right.
So it'll be just a sort of ballparking.
Right.
When the full moon is. Yeah.
This is a slightly side note, but I just have to mention this to you because I was so thrilled. So in your Venus class, and, you know, I'm just paying much more attention to Venus and everything, and my niece, who I'm not that close to, I just pulled her chart. Well, I'm paying attention to her now. She just swam the English Channel, and she's an Aries sun, She's got Aries and Venus, and she's got Aries rising, and she's got Mars and Cancer. But I just was like, oh my God, she swam the freaking English Channel. It's just incredible. I mean, I'm just so proud of her, and I'm just beside myself. But anyhow, I just had to mention that to you because it's kind of mind blowing. But
yeah, that's a fabulous example of embodying the Aries archetype of the feminine.
Yes, exactly. I am so in love with astrology, and I'm just so happy to have found this again because I've come back to it. And I'm just so happy. So this is a very electrifying time for me. I also have Uranus conjunct my sun and Mercury conjunct my sun. So I'm just very, very excited about this. I'm trying to decide which school of astrology I want to focus on, and the shamanic is definitely calling to me. But you know, there's just so much out there, and I'm. Being the double Gemini moon and ascendant that I am, I'm kind of reading and doing everything. But
that's actually I've noticed that. In fact, there's some students of the school that have from the past that have a lot of Gemini, and their tendency is to learn as much as possible from as many possible schools as possible.
That's kind of what I'm doing, yeah.
But if you like the night sky stuff, I do suggest you consider coming to our in-person cosmology night sky event. It's happening March 1st in 2019.
In what country or town or city?
It's going to be near Tucson. It's about... 30 minutes from the Tucson airport.
Okay. So. That's not the eye astrology thing that's not what Gemini Bread and Maurice is something different. Okay.
Yeah, well he's an example of who I'm speaking of because he took his first courses right there in Southern Arizona. And,
I know him. I don't know him, but I know of him. I follow him pretty closely.
Yeah. So he got his first transmissions about the night sky stuff right there where we're going to be having the course.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Very cool. Well, I will definitely consider that. I really will. I'm very interested, and this tonight was. I was writing feverishly. Is this unusual that there's this much going on? Because this feels like an awful lot of stuff going on.
Well, we respond to your enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I've been writing like crazy, and I will look at the at your website for the handout with a little bit more specifics about the eclipse. Because
I would like to the lunar cycles, yes. Uh-huh. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, both of you. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're so welcome. We appreciate you. And I have somebody else. I don't know who this is.
Hey, this is Bo. Hello.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
Hi there. First off, I just want to say with Mercury and Venus in Aries, I feel like a serious underachiever with the whole English Channel thing. Good grief. anyway.
Now, there's a Saturn reaction right there.
I know. But I just had to say it. I was also going to say, Daniel, you know, with Seshat, you could point back to the article you recently did on Egypt. There's a bit more there with some links on that for the last person who called in. To check that out and find that on either website, yours or the SAMS website.
Great suggestion. Yes. If the previous caller is listening, she can find the thing I wrote about it with all of the links on both the SAMS website as well as the GemarioApproach.com. Both the sites have those articles.
Yeah. My question is, you mentioned the Vision Quest moon, and I just want to clarify. So is that each year when the full moon is in Aquarius, that's considered the Vision Quest moon?
Yes. And that could actually be that you know, because you, that could happen over a whole month. So you could actually have it happen in you could have the full moon in late July. Most of the time, over many years, it'll be in August. I timed all my visits to Mount Shasta all through the 80s based upon when that full moon was.
Ah, okay, that's cool. Thank you. And then just one other quick thing. I just wondered if you and or Kaylin could talk just briefly about the general experience of Mars retrograde.
The general experience of it. As I'm sure you picked up on, the view of the Shamanic Astrology School with all three of the retrogrades, you know, both Mercury, Mars, and Venus, is a bit different than the more general view of it. It's as if the action of Mars is being suspended, you know, staying in the same stars, same area of the sky, you know, generally just a few degrees in the same degree, sign degrees. And, you know, it's actually, we could say, well, the recapitulation of the previous time is already over, but this is where basically Mars is preparing for rebirth. There's a certain suspension, you know, in the same way that it happens in with Mercury retrograde. You can't assume anything as far as the way Mercury, for example, usually operates. Mars is not operating in its usual way because it's going through a birthing. It's a very mysterious and magical time for it, and to be able to come up with generalities is like saying it's weak, or you know that I think is not, it doesn't do justice to it. It's kind of like it's suspending as it's going through a great deal of internal processes. You know, as I basically said, it's like going through the Bardos, or it's been conceived, it's prenatal. It's a time frame prior to birth. So that's all. You know, it's on the world stage. It's not off the world stage, but it's in an extremely unusual time period for Mars. So all that stuff about that in traditional astrology about Mars, about, you know, it's all just about your energy or taking action. That doesn't entirely apply here. You know, so it's all about Aquarius. It's all about what is Aquarius going to be. And meanwhile, Mars is not in its usual out front actual expression. There will be other times in the Mars cycle where it will be. You know, so that's the kind of the best I can do on it. It's very difficult to come up with really linear middle world expressions for it, except not to expect it to be a quote normal time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Awesome. That's a great question. Thank you for asking. So we have one more person.
Oh, okay. And, good. Stimulated discussion. That's great.
Right. So I don't know who it is. I just unmuted you, though.
Yeah. Hi. This is Emuna. I'm fairly new to shamanic astrology, and I actually today got to the class about the charting the planetary complexes. Hearing your voice already, Kaylin, and I have a question. So my Neptune is in 13 Scorpio, which is where you say Jupiter is. And this Neptune, I didn't realize, is squaring like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, I have all these, like I have Mercury, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and the South Node in Aquarius. So it's squaring all of those. And then I also have the Moon in Leo, which is squaring. Mm-hmm. And I guess the South Node in Leo as well. So I'm just wondering, I mean, obviously this Mars Leo, this Aquarius Leo thing that's going on is very big for me as well, personally, as well as, of course, for the humanity. I mean, I can see it so clearly. But is there anything else going on, like in terms of the Jupiter with the Neptune here? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I was kind of alluding to that earlier in the call, that the something like a Jupiter transit, it wouldn't be that important if the Neptune placement was not involved in a complex. And it certainly sounds like, you know, it's very majorly a complex on your own chart. So basically, with the Jupiter transit to to Neptune, it's expanding, activating those original complexes. It's actually beyond the scope of what I can do here on this call with not having your naval chart here. But the portions of the Neptune complexes that have been a challenge to you, but also where you could see a breakthrough to the celestial realm, you know, where basically are able to see high idealism and vision and bring that in. It can also sometimes have to do with being a late developer. You know, I mean, if we have Neptune to a Mars or Venus complex, then the strength of it comes online later. That's really just some clues here. But the point is that it's activating the complex. If it was only Neptune by itself, then not so much, because it's an outer planet that's moving very slowly. But you have it with a complex, so it's right on the front lines. It's much like individuals who have a lot of Scorpio with Saturn or Pluto. You know, then Jupiter hits that, and they're confronted with their secrets, and they go up against their boundaries, that kind of thing.
Got it. So, and my Saturn is in 5 Aquarius. So, is that something to do with this? Like, should I?
Say again? You were cracking out. I'm sorry. I didn't quite hear.
My Saturn is in 5 Aquarius. So, that should also inform me to do something on that particular.
I mean, everything we talked about regarding the eclipse season and the total eclipse of the moon, and you know all the stuff that's centered around the 5th degree of Aquarius, and then that would then emphasize what is Saturn on your chart, if it's involved in any complexes. So particularly if it's involved in a complex. But yeah, there's another example of the places your own life journey now in strong relief. You know, I'm right on the front lines.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for everything. It's really very remarkable. I'm very grateful. I second the phase enthusiasm for sure. Thank you.
Yay! Oh, thank you, Amuna. So I'm going to. So we can just say goodbye, and we'll complete this for this month, and everybody. This amazing, magical time with the eclipses and Mars and everything that's going on. So bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Blessings. Blessings to all. Bye-bye.
Yes, thank you.